Viggo Mortensen is my dude.
He's
my dude. I'll watch anything Viggo Mortensen is in.
Top five guys I would marry, even though I'm not gay.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Eastern Promises. Oh yeah. I mean, he's like, what if Daniel Day-Lewis is a little much for you?
And welcome back to Heroin, Butt, Sex, and Lord of the Rings. We are here again, breaking through the veil of mystery that these songwriters are weaving in front of our eyes. Every song ever written is actually about one of three things: heroin, butt sex, or Lord of the Rings.
Heroin, butt sex, or Lord of the Rings.
Take a moment, follow the links in the show notes to listen to the songs before we get into the discussion. Additionally, that will send some money to the actual artists who we're discussing here. So there will be a Spotify link and an Apple Music link so that you can go listen to the songs and the artists that we're discussing can profit in some small way off of our discussion. So today we are joined by Ryan. What do you call yourself? A shaman? Are you a spiritualist? Are you a guru? Are you a cult leader?
Definitely not a cult leader. Okay. Definitely not a guru.
Ryan Singer here.
I would say hello. Thanks for having me. I definitely would say that I am, you know, many if not all things, but you know, nothing at all simultaneously. Okay. I love doing stand-up comedy. That's my main thing that I guess I identify with. And then, you know, paranormal investigator.
Okay.
I do call myself an empath. I'm not afraid to do that. I know there's been pushback against the empath. Maybe, you know what I'd love to be? I'd love to end up achieving at some point is the essence of a mystic.
Ah, a mystic. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really tied into trying to have mystical experiences, which are pretty deeply intense and life-changing. So I'm on the path of searching for, I'm always looking for mysticism, you know, and paranormal falls into that, I think.
Mm-hmm. And you've been exploring this for quite a while. You have a very popular podcast called Me and Paranormal You that you run.
Yeah. Right? And it's basically just me having conversations with people who have paranormal experiences or abilities or, you know, secret societies, mystery schools, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, Bigfoot, all that stuff.
And you also have a brand new podcast with Angela Lovell called Where the Magic Happens.
This is where the magic happens. Yeah.
This is where the magic happened.
Yeah. The occult, witchcraft, and there's also some supernatural and some other things in there as well.
And Sean, you know, it's interesting for our listeners. We have never mentioned on this podcast because I like to get straight to the point, and I'm probably going to edit out most of this intro stuff anyway. But Sean has another podcast, and he has other interests other than music history and Lord of the Rings. He has a basketball podcast with a great comedian, Joey Devine, called Round Ball Rock. Tell us a little bit about that, Sean. I've listened to it. It's pretty. They get up pretty off course.
Yeah, like... we'll talk about, I mean, I think we spent maybe 15 minutes in a recent episode of the basketball podcast talking about the gambling odds to who was going to get cast as the Penguin. So that's not necessarily basketball related, I guess.
Okay.
But, every episode has a different original parody song about an NBA player. They used to all be about Luka Doncic of the Dallas Mavericks, but now there's a whole lot of basketball.
Have you done Boban Marjanovic or whatever? What's his name?
Oh, Boban Marjanovic. We did have one.
Have you released albums of these songs?
Well, there's a SoundCloud. If you go to SoundCloud, okay. Sean Kane SoundCloud, there's probably like 50 or so. I think we've recorded a little over 80 at this point.
Okay. we'll include a link to those too, because this is the music connected part of it.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And of course the show itself.
There's like, yeah, Luka Doncic is from Slovenia, so one of the songs is called Slovenian Rapsodoncic. And then Slovenian Pie is literally 8 minutes and 15 seconds long, and it's just about different Euro players to the tune of Don McLean's classic, American Pie.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, to American Pie. Okay, that's funny. Well, we are going to jump into these songs. What do you boys say?
Hey, let's get into it.
Let's do it. First up this week, this is going to be a doozy.
Where are we? What the hell?
This is a very important song. This is Hide and Seek, written by Imogen Heap from 2005. This song is completely a cappella, using only a type of vocoder, harmonizer, pedal. Imogen recorded this reportedly when her computer died, so she just worked with what she had one night, wrote some lyrics, and just used this weird pedal she had. Then she went and re-recorded it, and it turned out to be an enormous hit, her biggest hit. It is famously used in the scene.
It's the season 4 finale.
Season 4 finale from the OC, in which there's a murder, and the ooh, what you say moment here. Maybe I can find it real fast.
What you say, that you only meant well, cause you did. What you say, that it's all for the best, cause it is.
That's really the thing that got this song to cultural prominence. And then it was parodied by SNL that same year. This song, before we get into the many different interpretations of it, I'll just do the lyrics real fast, and then we can dive right in. Here are the lyrics to Hide and Seek, written by Imogen Heap, 2005. Where are we? What the hell is going on? The dust has only just begun to fall. Crop circles in the carpet. Sinking feeling. Spin me round again and rub my eyes. This can't be happening. When busy streets amass with people would stop to hold their heads heavy. Hide and seek. Trains and sewing machines. All those years, they were here first. Oily marks appear on walls where pleasure moments hung before the takeover. The sweeping insensitivity of this still life. Hide and seek. Trains and sewing machines. Oh, you won't catch me around here. Blood and tears, they were here first. What you say? That you only meant well? Well, of course you did. What you say? That it's all for the best? Of course it is. What you say? That it's just what we need and you decided this? What you say? What did she say? Ransom notes keep falling out of your mouth. Mid-sweet talk, newspaper word cutouts. Speak no feeling, no, I don't believe you. You don't care a bit, you don't care a bit. Hide and seek, ransom notes keep falling out of your mouth. Mid-sweet talk, newspaper word cutouts. That's it, those are all lyrics. She has said two separate things about these lyrics. One, she said that this was about losing someone important to her, and then sort of later alluded that that might have something to do with her parents' divorce. She has also said that she was outraged by George W. Bush's lack of reaction when he was told about 9/11 having no feeling about other people's suffering. So those are the only two statements that we have from Imogen about the interpretation of the song. If you go online and look at sort of like song meanings and all these different websites where they collate and debate this stuff online, we have a bunch of different stuff. We have alien invasions. We have a cheating spouse. We have a Holocaust interpretation that's very popular. We have the exploitation of Native Americans and colonialism in general. And we have 9/11. These are all the sort of major online interpretations. So if you're looking for a standard interpretation, I come down somewhere between 9/11 and divorce and colonialism.
Well, first of all, I think the most beautiful thing about writing anything and then putting it out into the world is that so many people will imbue like such deep meaning that you never anticipated. And then like they'll be like, oh, this song is clearly about the blah, 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 blah. And you're just like, oh, wow, interesting. Like you can then see it through their eyes maybe after they've told you about it, but you never intended that. It just maybe kind of came through you. I think it's pretty clear about like what this song is about. I mean, for me, with like the symbolism that's going on, but I don't know if you want me saying that right now.
In the actual,
right. I mean, for me, this one is easily heroin. There's like no doubt about it. I mean, you have the symbolism of the train and the sewing machine, you know, railroad tracks are heroin marks,
tracks. Okay.
The needle from the sewing machine, you know, it's like hide and seek. I mean, I don't particularly like this visual image. And so if people are listening, they might, you know, also not like this, but the hide and seek of the needle going in and then coming back out, oily marks appear on walls. I mean, like, you know, consider the walls, you know, being like this person's life, this person's body, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, what is, you know, the spoon being burnt and like becoming like oily. I mean, there's just no doubt about this one as far as I'm concerned.
I'm with you. Just the train and sewing machines just seems so clearly to be a heroin metaphor. And I do believe that there is a lot of 9/11 imagery, but that also fits with heroin because it kind of shows like not just George Bush's sort of numb reaction to it, but what does the United States do immediately after 9/11? It's bomb Afghanistan.
Home
and their
of
poppy fields. Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, that's exactly what we did. And it did not stop the heroin trade. That was never the purpose.
No, but it's very much like 9/11's a metaphor for heroin in this song. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But yeah, you've got blood and tears and, you know, just the disorientation, the numbness, spinning around, rubbing your eyes, like all of that seems very
confusion, yeah.
Very IV drug, heroin. And like you don't care a bit. It's sort of the kind of emotional numbness that comes from, you know, heroin addiction.
I feel like it's a conversation with the person, like the narrator of this song, or the person, you know, the subject of this song is having a conversation with themselves when it's like, what'd you say? That you only meant well, of course you did. What'd you say? And then like towards the end, you know, it's what you say, what did she say? And then it becomes like a slight disassociation between, you know, the person and, you know, who they really are. For me, it's like in ransom notes and things like this, you just kind of melt away, right?
Well, that ransom note would be the promise to yourself to stop doing it. And then you violate it. And then the punishment is you still have to do it.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, this one is just over the top. I mean, at first I was thinking like, oh, this could be butt sex.
Yeah.
Well, this trains and sewing machines thing is interesting to me because it's in both cases, it's like one step away. You're saying it's like, it's not trains, it's the tracks, the heroin tracks. With the sewing machines, it's not the sewing machine, it's the needle. So it's an interesting displacement. And it's her sort of intentionally burying these references because there are a lot of sort of anti-colonialist lyrics in here or direct references. And you're saying that sort of, it's the mind colonizing the body or the self, sort of the oppressed here is the same person as the actor who's doing the oppression.
I think, you know, it's the drug who's, I think, doing the oppression here.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And like the drug comes in and takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing else matters anymore. Now it's like
you
the domain
don't care
of the drug.
I don't believe you. All these sorts of things.
And so and that has an effect on the person, obviously. I think like when your mind is taken over by a drug, you know, it's still your mind, but you're kind of saying the words of your master without even realizing that, and then also realizing that you do have this master now.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. This is very interesting to me because I'm surprised that I'm not getting a ton of Lord of the Rings from across the table from Sean here.
Well, I have a Lord of the Rings theory, but go ahead with yours and then I'll jump in.
Well, mine is pretty broad here, you know, and it is this sort of colonialist white guilt song, in my opinion, on the surface layer. Hide your intentions, which Melkor did again and again, and seek power. Like, that would be the simple thing. And there are very few things. The only thing that sticks out that doesn't fit is trains, because there were war machines, there were gears, there were sewing machines, because there, looms. But Melkor didn't intend to lose the ring. So like this hide and seek thing seems intentional from Imogen's perspective. Like she's like, oh, you hide things. Like basically you hide your intentions and you seek power. I think in the standard interpretation is what she's saying. In this case, Melkor didn't intend to hide the ring. The ring just got lost. And then the ring was sought by so many people. You know, the sweeping insensitivity works pretty well. So the pseudo reign of Melkor and Morgoth that came and went. And they were here first, obviously talking about the elves. And so this could be thought of as sort of like the perspective of the men who seek power above all else, seeing how their world is being destroyed by their own hunger for power. It seems pretty simple, but I am liking this heroin thing, which I, as you can see from my chart, I don't have much for heroin. So, mm-hmm. But what are you thinking in terms of Lord of the Rings?
My Lord of the Rings theory, I actually thought that this was a lament about Peter Jackson going back to the Lord of the Rings franchise with the Hobbit.
With the Hobbit series, yeah.
Yeah, like the
tragedy.
The ransom notes, the newspaper words, it's like he's been, because the process of making these films is that he disappears into New Zealand for 4 or 5 years to make these trilogies. But the newspaper word cutouts are like negative reviews of King Kong and the Lovely Bones. Mm-hmm. He can't believe that he's back there, where he's trying to reassure himself, like, no, you're not creatively stagnant just because you're going back to this well a fourth, fifth, and sixth time. Yeah. And then when it gets to You Don't Care a Bit, it just shows like
he doesn't.
How much was he invested in those last Hobbit movies? Like it just couldn't have been that much, stretching him out that far. But I did mishear trains as chains. So I feel like that takes a little bit away from me because I'm not sure what trains and sewing machines is. And then looking at it, I feel like that's such a direct heroin reference. That's the main thing that's swaying me.
The one thing that the online critics, the amateur critics caught that I didn't, which was two things that point to divorce just in the standard interpretation, which I thought were well observed and fascinating, is crop circles in the carpet, meaning the marks that furniture leaves behind in the carpet after furniture is removed from a house, sort of like a splitting up of a family, and that oily marks left on walls where pleasure moments hung is sort of the ring of dirt or where a framed photo was. I think those are both pretty awesome.
Really cool. It also points to me a flop house.
Oh, yeah.
It also points
to me. They've sold the couch.
Like, everything's gone. Everything's been sold for drugs. Everything's gone.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Interesting stuff. And yeah, I think overall, you can go pretty far with Lord of the Rings, but then you get stopped by the trains. There are carpets in Lord of the Rings. At first, I was like, carpets? But yeah, there's plenty of rugs and carpets and stuff. So, I feel like you guys kind of nailed it on heroin with this one. I think we may have cracked it. I don't see much for butt sex in here.
No, I don't either, other than the, obviously the hide and seek is...
Blood and tears.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very melodramatic interpretation of butt sex that seems unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like she's talking about, you know, the persecution of butt sex seeking people. That doesn't really seem to line up. So where's all the drama coming from? I don't really get it.
Yeah. I mean, other than like the literal game of hide and seek that, you know,
hiding the salami.
Yes.
Right.
And,
hiding your, like being in the closet, but yet seeking, butt sex. You can start from there, but then now you're like, you don't care a bit. Like they were here first. What? Like it doesn't.
And that's not to say that a songwriter can't write any song from any perspective that they want.
Yeah.
But I just have a difficult time imagining Imogen Heap, especially under the origin stories of how this song came to be. Her computer breaks and now it's just her on a pedal, like singing something, right? Mm-hmm. Like alone in her room or wherever she is. I have a hard time thinking that she's like, oh, this great song about butt sex, I'm just going to put down with the pedal. I mean, it would be funny when you take into account like the way the song was recorded. I mean, because a song is the totality of all its parts, right? So the way that it's like it's stripped down, like when she originally records it, it's just her and a pedal.
Right. And like we said, the place has been gutted. There's no furniture anymore.
So it's like
she's
her,
broke.
Like, yeah. It's like when a person is addicted to a drug like heroin, it's literally the world is just them and the needle.
Right. And even then, like if you go with the colonialist sort of thing as a starting point from the standard interpretation, you end up in heroin with the war in Afghanistan and the poppies and everything like that. And sort of the addiction to oil and drugs that Americans have, you know.
And I think maybe inherently the people running the OC realize that they're like, oh, we have a scene where someone gets shot up and then they collapse on the carpet.
Boom.
Yeah.
All right, we nailed that one. Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap is about heroin. And we can move on to song number two. This is a lot of fun. Our second song is a little less depressing than our first song. This is Jump, written by Eddie Van Halen, Alex Van Halen, Michael Anthony, and David Lee Roth, 1983. I guess before we get into it too crazy here, let's go through the lyrics. Here they are. I get up and nothing gets me down. You got it tough. I've seen the toughest around. And I know, baby, just how you feel. You've got to roll with the punches to get to what's real. Oh, can't you see me standing here? I've got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. Oh, can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump. Might as well jump. Go ahead and jump. Jump. Go ahead and jump. Hey, you. Who said that? Baby, how you been? You say you don't know? You won't know until you begin. So can't you see me standing here? I've got my back against the record machine. I ain't the worst that you've seen. Can't you see what I mean? Might as well jump. Jump. Go ahead and jump. Might as well jump. That's it. Jump, 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 jump. The story, the little bit of background on this, Eddie wrote this. David didn't like it. It was because it's not like hard rock. It's a synth-based song. Eddie just had it floating around, and then I guess their roadie really liked it and kept playing it for David Lee Roth, and their producer liked it, so they were riding around in a car one day, and David started writing lyrics to it, and he was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. I think he found something that he could relate to in it, in that he likes to jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
David likes to jump.
Big part of the videos.
Yeah, he's jumping all the time.
Yeah. You know, it's like, to me, it's like such a simple thing. Like, well, I guess I like to jump. So let's do the song. I mean, jump is probably one of the, and we're going to be saying this word a lot probably, yeah, but it's one of those words that quickly loses its meaning. And, it's, and like other words take a little longer, but yeah, like, jump is one of my favorite words. Like visually, it kind of, you know, is a mirror of itself in a certain degree with the U and the M upside down, yeah, the J and the P are up and then down. So like jump is one of the coolest words,
right,
in the English language, I think.
Yeah,
and also the sound it makes is weird as hell, man. Jump.
Like you get that P in there.
Yeah, like,
yeah, there's so few words that are like that at all.
Yeah, like jump. And if you hear someone just, if you didn't know English and someone was just going, jump, 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 you'd be like, this person has lost their mind.
But you probably would start jumping if you someone probably, said yeah, it enough yeah, times if you were like, jump,
oh, I
jump,
get it,
jump, jump, jump. Like dogs get it. You're like, jump. And the dog's like, what? You're like, jump. And you hit the, you pat the couch cushion. You're like, jump. And eventually the dog's like, okay. And jumps.
But having said all that, it is crazy to me that like a song that became so popular was like almost an afterthought for the person who like wrote the lyrics.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's like, fine, I guess I'll write this song, whatever.
I guess yeah, we can record the biggest hit we're ever going to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. And David has said that this was inspired by a story about someone who was thinking of jumping off a building, and he guessed that someone in the crowd would want to see that person jump. And so it's
from their perspective then, like, go ahead and jump. Be like, I want to see you kill yourself.
Yeah. And like going into like just a general standard interpretation, there's a neat sort of juxtaposition with the very uppy, encouraging feeling of the song and then what it seems to be saying in that sense. It's sort of like the standard interpretation would be like, well, life is tough. Kill yourself or buck the fuck up and get on with business. Mm-hmm. Seems to be the standard interpretation. Does that jive with you guys?
Right. Like, you got it tough. I've seen the toughest around. You're fine.
You can make it.
Yeah, it's really that outdated like man mentality of like, you know, pull yourself by your bootstraps, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, be a man about it, you know.
Right. And then I feel like there is a tenderness in there because he calls the person who is speaking to baby twice in the song, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like, or it could be the condescending, like, but I do see that there can be tenderness here.
But it seems collegial rather than, I guess I'd say that in a standard interpretation, the gender of the person he's speaking to, the person he's addressing, is void. Like, there's no clue. I could just as easily see...
Hey, baby, how you been? Yeah. Like, right. That kind of vibe.
I'm sure Diamond Dave called men baby and called women baby.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Sean, it seems like you've got something on your mind over there. You
wanna... Well, I have an interpretation based on our...
We're talking our the world. Real butt
sex. The real thing. Meaning.
Yeah.
I do think it's about butt sex.
Okay, you think and it's about butt sex.
What's always taken me aback about this song is... The phrase record machine.
Yes.
Because it feels like David Lee Roth forgot the word jukebox.
And I always thought, this is a misheard lyric for me. I always thought he said wrecking machine.
Oh, I did too until I read the lyrics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so he's talking about a jukebox, and traditionally, like, juke became something that referred to music, but initially it was like dangerous or wicked. So really, he's got his back against the wicked box.
So it goes back to the wrecking machine is not inappropriate in a way.
No, not really. Because the wicked machine. I believe this song.
The wicked machine.
Yeah, okay. Wicked machine. Well, I think this is a song about David Lee Roth urging his partner to peg him.
Okay.
He's got his back against the danger box, you know, the...
Warming it up.
The wicked box. Her vagina's against his back, and she's ready to give it to him.
David Lee Roth, there's no indication I've looked through. There's no indication that he was gay or bi, but...
No, so, I'm not even saying he's gay. He's into pegging. Like, he's the toughest around. And honestly, I think he meant for this song to be Hump, but he knew it couldn't get played on the radio in the early 80s. And also, it naturally, with all the Dutch guys in the band, I can see there being like, if you're like a Dutch speaker and you read that, are you like Yump or are you like Hump? You know?
Okay, like a soft J.
It's kind of a soft J, like just because of the European influence of these Dutch Van Halen brothers in this band.
This seems to be working even without that JH thing. So it's, you know.
But the AO, hey you, who said that? Like, you don't know until you begin. Like,
right. Okay.
Might as well.
Well, of course. Okay. So I can come in on this. I just don't know why he would be saying that to his girlfriend. Of course, if they're already sleeping together, it's not like he has to sell her on sleeping with him. You're saying he's selling her.
He has to sell her on pegging.
On pegging him.
Yeah. And I think that's more of a tough sell.
But why is that? Interesting. Yeah, but like if he's already sleeping with her and she's been pegging people, then
I don't think she's ever pegged anybody.
Right, but it sounds like you're saying that he's offering himself as a decent candidate for being pegged. I eat the words that you've seen. Whereas that sounds like you would say that to someone who pegs in general.
No, I'm saying that he's like, I know pegging seems weird to you, girl in 1983, but is this really the worst thing you've been asked to do sexually? Like,
can we go for this?
Like, I'm
just
not
jump into.
I'm not trying to. I'm not even trying to put it in your butt. Is this the worst request you've ever had to put a strap on?
Wow, this is really
not the worst that you've seen.
You've really swayed me on this because, yeah. And I also with a, you know, not having a full grasp on the, like the actual, you know, point of view of the lyrics. I thought he was referring to himself as the record machine. Like, I make fucking records, baby. Oh. Right. And you've got your back up against the record machine because nothing gets me up. Uh-huh. Or once I get up, nothing gets me down unless I can go to, you know, do the, you know, have butt sex. But so when he says he's got his back against, but in truth, it's him saying I've got my back up against the record machine, which could be the music industry, you know, giving, you know, the one delivering the butt sex to him. And he's like, you know, I've seen Tougher, nothing, you got to roll with the punches. You know, the record industry will try to, you know, stick it in your ass.
Yeah, you get butt fucked by the record industry,
but you just got to go for it. But if you're going to be in this business, you just have to jump right in and you have to be ready for this.
So was that what you sort of came in with as your...
I came in with thinking that he was the record machine and he was giving, you know, he was the one delivering the butts, like, hey, you know, trust me, you're going to be okay. I've seen Tougher. It's going to be, you're going to be fine. But but it's interesting now because of, you know, the point of view of, you know, the lyrics that I kind of do like this idea that he's the one wanting to get pegged here. I mean, also there's the, you know, there's the Lord of the Rings tie-in, which I think is, you know, about jumping, you know, into the fire.
Jump into adventure, jump into the danger.
Jump into the volcano, right, to get the ring.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of jumping off of cliffs into rivers and things like that. None of them, there's other stuff in there that tends to confound the record machine. That would be like the only record, it would be the Hall of Records. It's not a machine. Any machine doesn't have anything to do with records.
Yeah, the interpretation I had was maybe the situation they have in the Mines of Moria, where they're reading the history, like it's the record of the Dwarves of Moria, and then they've got to jump to escape the Balrog. But
that's it's not a machine, it's a book.
Yeah, it's not really.
Yeah. Now, so I'll just spoiler alert. I also agree it's butt sex, but I have a very different interpretation of the butt sex case that doesn't involve pegging or anything like that. But I'll just briefly, like, let's clear out the heroin category just so we know. So Lord of the Rings doesn't work for me. Heroin, some of the guys in, I'm fairly sure that David Lee Roth has done heroin, but he was not a heroin guy. Some of the other guys in Van Halen were, and a lot of other people around the scene were. Dave is way too high energy to have been on heroin. He's like the weird spark plug. Thank God he found this, because otherwise he just would have exploded. There is no mention of drugs of any kind in David Lee Roth's Wikipedia, which I bet he paid for or had some. He paid someone to take them out.
Constantly scrubbing.
Yeah, he's constantly scrubbing. Because, newsflash, David Lee Roth did a lot of drugs. But it was uppers. It was booze and uppers and pussy. That's what, those were his drugs. And rock and roll. So, I mean, the only heroin way to look at this would be, because I do think no matter what you say about this song, this is an advice song. This is counsel. He's giving someone counsel. And you can look at this in a similar way to the way Mike Patton from Faith No More was counseling Anthony Kiedis to get off heroin.
Okay.
In Epic. So this would be an upper guy being like, quit doing downers, you guys. Jump. Like, you know, jump into your life. You're saying no to life. Say yes, 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 yes to life. Which is what David was doing. But I don't think that holds up that well, especially when you compare it to the butt sex angle. First of all, okay. Just to flash forward to my major argument, is this is a straight Dave covered in makeup, wearing pink nylon pants with feather boas, still straight, encouraging his inevitable gay fans to come out of the closet and jump into a gay lifestyle that is honest to their feelings. So, you know, this song was a perfect opportunity to do that. It has like Disco Queen vibes as soon as the song comes on. Like the opening just feeling of the song, it just, this could be an Elton John song. This could be a Queen song, the way how up it is, how strongly it comes in, and the synth elements. So in the song, uses the word baby twice. I think he's talking to obviously gay fans of his who are at his concerts. You've got it tough. Maybe they work at a Catholic university. Maybe their parents are super conservative. That's tough. But he's seen people with even tougher situations accept themselves and jump into the gay lifestyle. And he says, you say you don't know, you won't know until you begin. And look at me. Like, I can do this. But here's me. I'm standing here. Look at me. I'm wearing makeup and a feather boa.
My hair's long.
I'm standing up against... I'm fine. It's not like going to be paradise, but it's going to be honest.
Come here and take your shirt off like me.
Do it. It seems like we're all in agreement that it's about butt sex. I just think it's because there's this obvious encouragement in the song, and it's sort of like, what does it mean by jump?
Yeah.
And to me, that just simply means come out of the closet. Quite simple.
I do like the idea that it's counsel. And that it's an encouragement song as opposed to just kind of like, hey, feel good song. Yeah, yeah. Like, hey, right. Man, I just like to jump, you know. But
I do like that too a lot.
Yeah.
It's I mean, scary.
Some yeah. people may want to just put a toe in and then, but it's like, you're never going to be swimming, man. So it's like, jump in, get in there, jump into that butt sex lifestyle.
Yeah. And he's saying might as well jump. You know, it's like, if you have a tough situation, you have a very... Anyone who's in the closet has very strong reasons to be in the closet.
Indeed.
And to jump out of the closet, I mean, you can crawl out of the closet or you can jump out of the closet.
Might as well jump.
You might as well jump out of the closet because you're never going to, you know, you're never going to...
You have the worst of both worlds if you're doing it that way. I mean, because you don't, you might get glimpses of what you truly want and who you truly are. But then you're still like living this great battle within yourself of a lie and feeling ashamed and feeling not allowed to be oneself. So at the very least, you get to be oneself and some of your, you know, fears might be realized. But at the end of the day, you don't have to be covering your tracks constantly or putting up a facade of who you think people want or need you to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because like, there are a lot of straight people who have given a lot of inspiration to gay people and vice versa through their songs. I was just listening to It's Raining Men earlier today. strong contender to be on the podcast, actually written by Paul Schaefer, sung by women, became a enormously powerful gay anthem, you know? So, if you're David Lee Roth, or if you're just hair metal, glam rock people in general, and you're cool with gay people, then at some point you realize that you're an icon for gay people. You know, not that gay people all want to wear feather boas and eyelashes, but it's encouraging to see someone who's not even gay doing it. You know what I mean? You're like, well, this person is showing, look at David Lee Roth. Everybody loves him, and look at all the guys from Van Halen. They're dressed like women, essentially, and everybody loves them.
It's somehow super flamboyant, but still ultra-masculine energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, that's a great, you know, aspect of gayness, you know? It's like, you know, or like a very out, you know, flamboyant gay lifestyle. It's like, no, you're a goddamn man. And look at you, you pretty baby.
Yeah, and it's also like being a rock star, you can wear and do anything you want, which is also a benefit of being that rock star life. But
it's a benefit to anyone society.
Anyone can have that rock star mentality. You don't have to be a rock star to do it.
Exactly.
So it's like, be yourself.
Yeah.
It's almost like cartoonish performative sexuality. Mm-hmm. Like
he's making
super
duck lips.
Heightened teacher fantasy, or like the California Girls video where he's just literally bowled over by women, almost to the point where it's like it almost borders on like Liberace, where it's like he's wearing like a fur and a hat and crazy glamorous sunglasses and just high-stepping around a bunch of bikini babes. I bet David Lee Roth has at least masturbated with another man before.
Yes.
Like, for sure. Just
David Lee Roth's penis has touched another penis.
And the whole time he's just going, oh, yeah!
Hey, baby.
Ooh.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Who's that? How you doing, baby?
Yeah. That's the reach around when he's getting pegged is the oh who's that? Oh
yeah, I mean,
baby, how's that feel?
It's fun, you know, like for friends, you know, who are affectionate with each other to just do like, you know, some light dick slapping in public. It's fine, it's cute, you know.
I bet he's a big cup check guy too. Cup check, just like right in the crotch, like cup check.
How you doing down there? Okay, good to see you, buddy.
Whoo.
Yeah, I think you kind of swayed me away from the pegging.
Well, I just don't see the evidence of the pegging itself or him talking to a woman in particular.
I think it's the part about having his back against the record machine for me, just because it's such a weird phrase of like, like, why is his back against the record machine? It's like he wants you to make sure he knows he's like lean back up against something.
Well, see, I kind of thought of that as him presenting himself as an object, sort of saying like, "Look at me, I'm out here for fucking sale." Like,
kind of a casual lean back, like he's just kind of chilling.
He's out there
resting up against the jukebox, which is, you know, essentially everything that has made them.
Yeah. Well, and like, you know, if this fan of his, sort of in the fiction I'm creating, that, you know, that I think David was creating. You know, comes up to him and goes like, wow, look at you. And he's like, well, look, buddy, I'm straight, but you walked up to me, you were attracted to me. So if you want to come out here like this, people will walk up to you just like that. You know, like he's, you know, it's just sort of like, it worked, didn't it? if we look at the video.
Yeah.
What Dave is, what this whole band is wearing. They all have scarves.
So we got a tank top. He's wearing mascara.
Big hair.
Eddie's wearing like a yellow tiger print blazer, kind of.
Yeah, and Dave, it has a torn up. He's wearing a fishnet tank top.
Over another tank top and leather pants, I think.
Yes. The rest of the guys are a little more hetero. But David is out here just...
He's doing duck lips or whatever the whole time. He's not singing.
Yeah, he's really spooning Michael Anthony a lot on these choruses.
Yeah, he's a lot of hip thrusting. He is wearing panties over his...
Yeah. Yeah. And now he's on his hands and
he's
knees.
He's on all fours.
See, I do he's think there's like a pegging element to it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean,
he's just present. There's a lot of presenting. That's all.
Yeah,
and he's at least putting it out there.
He is putting it out there. He's making himself a sex object. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like the same way like Warrant or some bands like that would have like women dressed just like this in their videos. He's like cutting out the middleman. And no, he's dressed like that.
We don't actually need these women. Like, you got, I have everything you need.
They're not crawling around on a miniskirt on top of a Corvette. He's doing it. He's like, we could save $20,000 if we just.
Yeah, it's like he saw like a Robert Palmer video. He's like, that looks like fun.
Yeah.
I could be her.
I could be all of them at once.
I'm Robert Palmer and the girls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we can quibble about the exact context of the butt sex in here, but I think that this song is about butt sex.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
It is freewheeling a lot of ways sexually, I think. Yeah.
It took me quite a while to get to it, though. Like, I was a little worried because we established that this was a song for the episode, and then I was researching it and stuff, and I got a little worried. I was like, shit, I don't know if I can find it in any one of these three things. And then all of a sudden...
It jumped out at you.
It jumped.
Yeah. I kept thinking about Gimli the dwarf initially, but yeah. Because he gets tossed, and that's not the same as jumping.
That's true. He gets thrown. Yeah, there's not... I mean, there's a lot of jumping, but David likes to jump.
Yeah, yeah.
He's good at it.
He is good at it.
Yeah. I get excited every time he does it in the video.
Yeah. great vocal range, good vert. He's got a good vertical.
He would have tested well at the NFL Combine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's true. He's got the whole package, and he has panties over his package as well.
Yep. Ladies' panties. They're not just for ladies. Well, this has been really fantastic. I think we nailed it. Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap is about heroin. Jump by Van Halen is about butt sex. Check out Ryan's great podcasts, Me and Paranormal You, and
This Is Where the Magic Happens, available everywhere. And also RyanSingerComedy.com, although I think it's kind of, I switched hosting like an idiot. But you can find me on Instagram at Rysing, R-Y-S-I-N-G, and then Twitter at Rysing. And then I'll be in Kalamazoo, Detroit, and Dayton, Ohio in December, if you're in those areas.
Seeing Ryan Singer do live performances is something else.
That's great.
As with Sean Keen, who is one of the most prolific comedians I've ever met. He has new material every single time I see him. I don't know how he does it.
Oh, thank you.
But it's a wonder to behold. And check out his other podcast, Round Ball Rock with Joey Devine. It's fantastic. Yeah. Even if you're not into basketball, which I'm definitely not, I just enjoy their company. Thank you very much for joining us on Heroin, Butt Sex, and Lord of the Rings. We will see you next time very soon with comedian Aaron Brooks, the creator of the Lanalax Corporation. You can, which is a fantastic podcast, even weirder than ours. All of our fans should become subscribers to Round Ball Rock, This Is Where the Magic Happens, and Me and Paranormal You, because it's pretty much one-to-one crossover on those. And you can go vote, put your vote in ahead of time on what you think that those songs, the upcoming songs, are about. And so you'll just be right here at the table with us, weighing in and influencing our opinions. Look forward to it, and look forward to being with you again here on Heroin, Butt Sex, and Lord of the Rings. Have a great day.